Okay, we're back, and let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to two folks here from the Public Assets Institute. And joining us here is Paul Cielo and also Jack Hoffman. We're going to talk a little bit about property taxes coming up this hour, and we'll take your calls at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. And we already got some calls here on the line. If you could just be patient here for a couple of minutes, I'd appreciate it. Paul, let me, Jack, let me start with you, because really this discussion, at least for me, started with an email that you sent me a couple of weeks ago where you really challenged this whole idea where people in the media and also public officials, including the governor, are saying that they feel that school spending is, quote unquote, out of control and the property taxes are too high. And you basically said to me, well, where's the justification for that? So can you explain to me why you were saying that?
I think my question is, I don't think they've defined the problem very well. So, I don't know if, you know, we hear people say that that property taxes are going up too fast. I don't know what they're looking at. Property taxes actually were going up faster, 8 or 9 years ago than they're going up now. The rates are different, but in fact, taxes were going up faster a while ago. Another thing that we've talked about is there seems to be this idea that there's a sudden crisis. You know, somehow our spending has suddenly gotten out of whack. And when we look at how much we spend on education over time against some background measures, we don't see a big change. And the other thing is, I think that it's important in this discussion to recognize that we actually have a very good system. And, even this year, people were alarmed that 34 budgets went down. 90% of our budgets pass. So, I would say that's democracy in action. I don't see that as a crisis.
Can you address the same question, Paul?
As Jack said, I think the first thing we have to look at when we're talking about schools and property taxes is what are we getting for the money we're spending. And as Jack said, we have one of the best public education systems in the country, that Vermont consistently ranks in the top five in terms of test scores. I'm not a big fan of test scores as a measure, but it's what we have, and it's the only way, it's one of the main ways that we look from state to state in terms of impact. Now, is that, could we do better, in Vermont? Of course. But I think the question is, is there a crisis that rises to the level of we need major reforms across the system, or do we need to manage our system better? I would say the fundamentals of the system actually work, and that we need to make some management changes. Some structural, some basic management structure changes, but I don't think that we need a system-wide reform, which is what people are talking about. But I guess what I would say is that the question I would have in general is, what's the problem? And Jack posed this in his blog, and this is what we're talking about is, interestingly enough, when Jack did a blog a few weeks ago on this question, we would have people respond. We had a lot of responses to it, and people would say, well, it's obvious. It's almost like it's obvious, you idiot. Don't you understand? And then there would be 8 or 10 different versions of what the problem was. It's very important to define what the problem is if we are serious about actually having a solution.
So you said you were talking about outcomes. I would argue that I don't think people are arguing whether there's good outcomes or not. I think people really, the pressure is the other end here of how much it's costing them in property taxes.
So, there's a question of what's the right amount of property tax. I think, if that's the only, if all you're thinking about is, are my property taxes too high, and you're not thinking about anything else, I think the answer would almost always be yes, regardless of what they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to have some, the reality is we have, 80,000 children in Vermont that we want to educate so that they have a future and that there are future. It's going to cost money to do that. you know, we'd rather not pay the bill when we leave the restaurant, you know, but we have to do that. So it's hard to know what's the right number. What I can say is that most of the conversation that we're aware of about Vermont spending too much or property taxes being too high has to do with national data and comparing Vermont to other states that we rank high. Now, we rank high in terms of test scores, so in terms of outcomes, but we do rank high in terms of spending per pupil.
Right.
The problem is that the national data is not very reliable. And it's not reliable because we don't have a national data collection system. We have individual states that manage their systems and report to the federal government or to national associations. And we don't really know what those numbers are. You know, they're pretty, so it's a fine way to start a conversation. But to say definitively we're spending too much based on national spending per pupil numbers, I think is not a good place to land. And I'll just add one other thing, and that it was a study that was done in 2011 in Massachusetts that kind of gets at this question. It was done by the Massachusetts Budget and Policy Center. And they looked at private schools and public schools and the costs in Massachusetts. And so they corrected the private schools for room and board, so that they were just looking at day school costs. And what they found is that the private schools cost 2.5 times per pupil what the public school cost. It was over $30,000 per pupil. So one conclusion you could draw from that is public schools are a bargain. And at, you know, why is $14,000 or $15,000 considered too much? Only because Vermont ranks high relative to other states. So, and Jack wrote recently a blog about, and actually I'll let him talk about this, but about what one of the things in those costs, like that Vermont includes a lot of human services activities in school costs because they're done in schools. And we haven't really separated what are education costs and what are human services costs, but all of those costs are going on to the property tax. So, you know, Jack can talk more about that.
But tell me this. The burden on, if you can have an average taxpayer, is the burden that people are paying in property taxes larger today as a percentage of their income? Because income has stayed pretty stagnant here in Vermont. If anything, the median income's gone down a little bit. So isn't the percentage of income that people are paying in property taxes larger than it was before?
Well,
I mean, that would indicate to me a burden.
Well, one of the we have to remember that, you know, 2/3 of Vermonters actually pay their school taxes based on their income.
Mm-hmm.
The narrative we heard during the last session, there were two narratives we heard last session. One was the people who pay based on their income don't really feel the full effect of the spending increases, and therefore they're sort of blithely voting up their school budgets. But on the other hand, property taxes are just, you know, killing people. So I'm not entirely sure where the complaint about high property taxes is coming. Are the people who are paying on the basis of income, are they saying their taxes are too? I don't know. And to answer your question about property taxes as a percentage of income, as a percent of personal income, which is, that includes to all kinds of, it's Social Security, it's $30 billion.
Okay.
The amount that we spend on, and I can't give you exactly what property taxes are for that, but our education spending as a percentage of our total personal income has been flat for 20 years. So again, that says to me there isn't something that's suddenly gone haywire in the last couple of years.
Okay. What do you think's going on? Why is the chorus out there saying this?
You know, I think people are feeling squeezed. You know, as you said, you know, incomes aren't stagnant. They're actually been going down.
Right.
Median household income is going down. And I think I think people are generally feeling very squeezed. taxes are one place that people, I think, feel they have at least some hope of getting some relief. I mean, you can't complain to your fuel dealer, you know, that you can't afford the heating oil. I mean, fortunately, that's been going down. But, you know, there's a limit to what you can do to control some of the other costs that we have. You know, government is one place that responds to people, and taxes are one thing that I think people feel they can control. So, you know, I think that it's a reflection of the fact that people are feeling squeezed, and they might get some relief here. I don't know, and, you know, I'd be happy to hear from callers. That's one theory, I think, for, you know, why people feel beleaguered these days.
Let me throw another one out at you, too. I live in Burlington. We had a situation where people had to vote, and the taxes were going to go up 10% on a budget that went up about 2 or 3. So there's a total disconnect between how much the budget was going up, or there was not a total disconnect. There was a detachment from how much taxes were going up in terms of how much the local budget was going up.
This gets to an issue we were talking about before about, you know, we need to have a clear understanding of what we're dealing with. That connection between a change in the budget and your tax rate, that connection was broken 18 years ago when we passed Act 60. What affects school budgets is per pupil spending.
School taxes.
Or school taxes is per pupil spending. So, you know, you can have no increase in your budget, but if you have fewer kids, yes, your taxes will go up because, you know, by definition, your per pupil spending has gone up. So, I have to say, I was a reporter. I wrote about this, you know, for many years, but it still surprises me that you still frequently hear this complaint. Well, my budget only went up 1%, but how could it be that my taxes went up? Well, it's because the system is different. The system is not the old system where there was a connection between a budget increase and taxes. It's per pupil spending is what determines your tax rate.
All right, let me have you, before we lose another call here, I apologize. Sam, give us a ring back. I should have gotten you sooner. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Let's go to Granville. Vivian, good morning. How's it going?
Whenever I go to town school, the school town meetings, that when the cost is presented to the residents here, and I live in Granville, it's a very small town, and they are always sort of filtered. It's as if the school board doesn't really want to say what the actual per pupil cost is, because they want to give us the watered down cost after the subsidies and the small school, you know, benefits and all those things are given to us by the state, which we pay for too. I don't know, it just seems like we can't even get that real number. They don't want to tell us that.
Okay. All right. Okay. Sorry.
I want to make a distinction here that the number that the school board is giving you is what's called education spending. And that's the number, education spending per pupil. And that's the number that actually affects your taxes in your community. The total number of that there's that your school is spending per pupil does not directly affect your taxes. And the reason is that the state provides what are called categorical grants for things like special education, for transportation. School district may get federal grants directly. There may be fundraising in a community from, you know, basketball tickets or that sort of thing that go actually into the budget. So when that all sugars off, you end up with a thing called education spending per pupil, and that's what affects your taxes.
All right. Thank you for your call, Vivian. Let's go to Essex. Steve, good morning.
Yes, I have two questions, and I will hang up and listen to you. Who's this gentleman talking, and is he by any chance of Vermont, Mr. Gruber? Thank you.
All right. Let me see if I could take a shot at this. Paul Cielo, who's joining us, is with Public Assets Institute, and Jack Hoffman is also here. Paul is a former Vermont legislator. He was in the legislature during the passage of Act 60. Jack Hoffman, longtime reporter for the Vermont Press Bureau. So maybe that was helpful. I don't think you guys have said the American public is stupid yet. Do you feel Vermonters actually understand the system, though? I mean, we do sound a little gruberish here. Sounds like Vermonters might be a little ignorant about the system here.
Yeah, it's a good question. No, I think that the whole point of Act 60 is that we needed to have a way to make sure that money was got to individual students in a way that was fair across the state, and that wasn't happening prior to Act 60. But we also wanted to do it in a way that respected the ability of local voters to decide how much to spend on their schools. And so we actually are very strong supporters of the idea, and we think this is actually threatened by some of the current conversations, the idea that local voters should be able to vote on how much they spend per pupil or they're spending on the children in their schools. What Act 60 does, and what the Supreme Court in 1997 required, is that the differences in spending couldn't be the result of differences in community wealth. And that's what Act 60 corrected.
What's the motivation, Paul, for a community to try to save money if it doesn't really matter? It's not going to have any local impact. Why shouldn't communities just spend whatever they want?
It does have an impact.
Well, you said it wasn't connected.
No, what Jack said is that the total school budget is no longer connected to the tax rate. What is connected is the spending per pupil. And the reason is that if you lose pupils, what the system does is it sends the money to where the pupils go. It doesn't leave the money in the community. Just because you voted $1 million last year and this year, but you lost 25 pupils, the state doesn't send you money for pupils that aren't there. It goes to where the pupils are.
Okay. So what's the motivation for a community to try to save money in their budget?
Keep their taxes down.
Yeah. If you lower your spending, you will lower your spending. Spending per pupil has two components. One is spending, and one is the number of pupils. So if you lower your spending, you will have lower taxes in your community.
All right.
If you lower your spending per pupil, you'll have lower taxes.
Okay, but is the spending per pupil done on a local level or on a state level?
You mean the calculation? It's based on the number of pupils that are actually in that community, based on a census. Now, this has been true for a while, that it's based on a census that ends up being 2 years old. So it becomes difficult to say, you know, is this the number of pupils that were actually in the classroom? Because you have to make the money available before the fall of when children actually show up in school.
Okay,
so they do a September census every year and to determine how many kids are in that community, and then that forms the basis of the system and distributing the funds.
So let me try to answer that.
Where the system is the same across the state is that a penny on the tax rate in every town raises the same amount of money. But then it's up to each town to decide how much they want to spend per pupil. So the effort to raise the money is the same everywhere. But what varies from town to town is, you know, you get to decide that, you know, you want to spend $10,000 per student, and that'll determine your tax rate. I want to spend $12,000 per student. I'm going to have a higher tax rate than you are because I'm spending more per pupil. But my tax rate's going to be proportionally higher than yours. So if I'm spending 20% more than you are, my tax rate's going to be 20% more.
Okay. Here's where I'm having difficulty. You said a few minutes ago, I used the example of Burlington, that if the budget goes up 2%, that you can have taxes go up 10% because of what's going on a statewide basis. So why is it then?
I
misunderstand there?
We need to know what happened with Burlington's per pupil spending.
Okay. So when they say the budget went up 2%, that doesn't tell you what that is, or it does?
No.
I have to know how many pupils there are.
All right.
Or the change.
Okay. So how can anybody, when they go into the voting booth, have any idea really what they're doing? I mean, they sound like such unknown numbers. I've never heard them talk in Burlington when there's discussion about the school budget, about increases in the per pupil spending. It's always done on what the projected tax rate. It's always done on how much the budget's going to go up.
Well, I don't know what they do in Burlington. I was on a school. I was on my school board.
Everybody reports this the same way across the state. Do you ever see in newspaper articles that talk about individual communities and that per pupil spending has gone from X to X? It's always what the total budget is.
I think that is a problem. I will tell you that, in my school district, I was on the school board in Twinfield, and that's how we explain things to people. This is what's happening to our per pupil spending, and we even went through and showed them what the different factors were. I'm sorry, I can't speak to what happens in Burlington.
Okay. Right.
The state publishes the per pupil spending numbers once the budgets are submitted. So it's not that the information is not available. It is available. And, most school districts that I'm aware of use that number. When they talk about education spending per pupil, that's what affects your tax rate. That went up 10%, and then this is what happened to your tax rate. So, but I do think it's a problem that the press continues to report on what happens to the overall budget as if that's what's driving the tax rate in the community. I think that's adding a lot to the confusion.
Well, it's the way it always was. I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I agree.
Back when you were at the Herald, that direct local spending then had a direct impact on what the tax rate
was.
That's
right. And that changed in 1997. But you would think over the ensuing 17 years that we could get this right. And because I think it's a disservice, I think, to citizens that we keep talking about it in this way and it's understandably confusing to people. But it doesn't need to... The system isn't inherently confusing. I think it just needs to be that this is what we talk about. And this is, in other words, if we're going to manage to spending per pupil, we need to talk about spending per pupil.
But the spending per pupil also has a statewide component to it, doesn't it?
What
everybody's spending has an impact on what tax rates are in a particular community. Yes? No?
Not in that way. In other words, when you vote in your community, that's not in real time having an effect on somebody else. What happens is that the state does what we just heard on Monday. The tax commissioner is required by statute to every December 1st to recommend to the legislature what the education-based homestead tax rate should be for a certain amount of education spending per pupil. Now, what's interesting about this conversation is that it's been characterized as the governor's administration is recommending a 2-cent increase in property taxes, and that's not true. That's not what that press release was about. What it is calibrating the system. It's basically saying for every... I don't remember the number. Do you remember off the top of your head? 9258 or something?
No, it's what they're saying is a dollar in this coming year is going to raise
$9,459 per pupil. Okay.
Last year, 98 cents raised $9,285. This clearly is a bad, we really shouldn't be presenting the information this way. It would be much clearer to everybody if they just said, this year, a penny on the tax rate is going to generate this much. And then people could do the arithmetic and see whether it changed.
Mm-hmm.
If you actually do the arithmetic and compare, 98 cents to whatever, this year's amount was, and what the governor just proposed, a dollar compared to the $94.59, they're virtually identical.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, it's not going to be any harder. If you had the same per pupil spending next year that you have this year, you will see virtually no change. It's a fractional change, but really not enough that anybody's going to notice.
Okay. I apologize to those hanging on the line. I need to ask a fundamental question here. We're spending more money in gross dollars for education this year than we were, let's say, 10 years ago. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Now I'm a little, yeah.
Okay. And there are fewer students. So how can people in their head justify that we are spending more money on education, there are fewer students, and the per pupil cost, I understand, you know, arithmetically has to go up because of that. But maybe that's the problem.
That's clearly what one of the big things people are talking about, that, you know, these two diverging lines. You know, we have costs going up, pupils going down. I was at this big education conference in Burlington a couple weeks ago, sponsored by the Vermont Business Roundtable and the School Boards Association. It's a good group of, you know, I think there were about 200 people there. One of the things I took away from that, and I think other people did too, and there were discussions about it, was the money coming out of our education fund is not just going for education. In fact, a lot of what's going on in schools is addressing social problems. You know, I heard one person describe it as a lot of what we spend, quote, education funds on is to lower the barriers to education. We really need to understand how much we're spending on education and how much we're spending on these other things. You know, I think some people, and I, you know, we do need to figure out how much that is. And I think there's a legitimate question whether or not you really want to pay for those things with the property tax, or whether those costs should be moved back to the general fund and paid for through broad-based taxes. So, you know, that's an important question. But I think that's a possible explanation for, or I think it should help people understand how costs can continue to go up, even though we have fewer students. We're having to do more and more for these, you know, this declining number of students.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I think one of the things that would happen, if there were more students, let's say there were a 20% increase in students and not a 20% decrease, you guys wouldn't be coming in here and arguing that we should be spending less money, right? I mean, it would be kind of counterintuitive. More students in the system, we need to spend more money. Right.
Well, let me just ask, if people are complaining that we're spending too much money, would they be any happier if we had more students, but it was still costing us as much?
I'm not sure it would, but the, you know, and I guess the burden wouldn't be any different because we all pay. But I think what people see is, if you looked at it in terms of a business with customers, if you have more customers coming in the door, you're going to need to spend more on help, people covering the store, maybe more inventory. Your costs go up as you have more customers. As you have fewer customers, you better decrease your costs somewhere or you're going to be out of business.
Well, I guess I would say, first of all, this isn't a business. And yeah, again, we're having to do more for the students. So I think we have to find out whether, is it really a question of we're spending the, you know, just more money to deliver the same educational services, or in fact are we delivering a lot more services and we need to distinguish between those two?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I would add, Mark, is that according to the folks we get information from at the Agency of Education, that while we've had a reduction of roughly 20,000 students, 25,000 students overall, we have not had a reduction in real numbers of special education students. That number has stayed fixed, which means there are a much higher percentage of the remaining students. And that creates costs in the system that, you know, when you look at those percentages, if that percentage is going up, the percentage of special education students, that's another, it's signal that of why costs may be holding, even though the student population is going down. But we, you know, we're not pretending to say we have the answer to these questions. What we're trying to do is have the conversation be based on facts and data to the extent we can. Facts and data don't always answer all the questions, but I think they get you closer than if you're just speculating or hearing anecdotal or frustrated, you know, statements. While I understand those, I think if we're going to have solutions that actually change things, in a direction that moves us where we want to go, we have to have be trying to base this on some analysis.
Okay, you say you don't have the answer, but you also say that when people like the governor say school spending is out of control, that that's wrong.
Well, I would say he hasn't given any facts to back that up. And the information we have, when we look at the 20-year trend of what we spend on schools as a percentage of gross state product or percentage of personal income, whichever indicator of the economic activity you want.
Or even as a percentage of all of our state and local taxes.
That it's flat. And so what's he saying? We don't know. So I think, you know, if you're going to make an assertion that things are out of control, that there's a crisis, I think there's an obligation to say why you think that and present some data.
Okay. So if he hasn't presented that and you guys have looked at it and your information says that it's been flat, then he's wrong.
Well, I don't know that I would definitively say he's wrong. I would say there's no evidence to say that there's a crisis and that requires a dramatic solution. So we shouldn't be, you know, like turning the system inside out to fix something when there's no evidence that there, when he hasn't presented evidence that there's a problem.
Okay. So is it an open question to you?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a legitimate question. I think the question of are we spending too much? Some people think we spend too little. I think those are legitimate questions and that we should be looking to understand, you know, what's true about this. Now, one of the things that was true about Act 60, I want to get back to your, you know, the question about do people understand this and what about respect for citizens, that I think, you know, there's back when the Supreme Court ruled in Vermont, there were a bunch of Supreme Court decisions around the country. And they're typically done based on what's called adequacy or equity. Vermont was an equity decision. What that means is that the court said that all school children in the state should have equal access to the resources for a quality education. They didn't say there's a certain amount of money that you need to spend to provide. That's what an adequacy decision would say. There's a certain amount of money you have to spend. What it does, what Vermont's system does, it actually leaves the question of what the right amount of money is to spend to local voters. And I think it should stay that way. I think that's an important part of it. But you need a system that people can understand. If you're going to have a direct democracy system, which is what we have, people actually vote on how much they're going to spend in their community, then we need to actually have a system where they understand the tax consequences of that decision clearly. And that's not the case now. And so I think we made some recommendations to the legislature last year. We think that that is a big problem. It's been an ongoing problem, and frankly, it's gotten worse as the legislature has taken actions to solve very specific problems that haven't looked at the whole system and the impact on the system or the impact on is it being clear for somebody who's just walking in once a year to vote on a school budget.
Mm-hmm.
And they've made it more complicated. And so I think there's a number of things that could happen to the system to actually make it clearer so that we don't have the kind of confusion that we were having in this studio today.
Yeah. We'll take a short break. We'll be back, continue our discussion right after these important announcements.
The Norwich University cadets wrap up the first semester on the road this weekend, traveling to Skidmore and Castleton State. And this is the place to be listening for all the action. I'm George Como. Join Corey Gustafson and me. Norwich Skidmore hockey Friday night. Norwich Castleton hockey Saturday afternoon right here on the Northfield Savings Bank WDEV Norwich Hockey Network.
When I first started in the car business, customers would complain that buying a used car was too much work. They could look in the paper, but even today, some dealers ask more for a used car than they do for a new one. They could drive all over town to find a car, then track down a salesperson to get a price, or today you can go online, but many dealers require you to enter your personal information to get a quote for their special internet price. Well, at Midstate, we set out to change all that. Our used car department has been chosen as the best place to buy a used car for 2 years in a row. It really is simple. We clear clearly mark the price on every car, or you can go online at midstatedodge.com where you'll find the price, several pictures, and Carfax vehicle history reports for every car. Now here's the best part. We employ state-of-the-art software to compare our prices to other dealers in real time and adjust them constantly to ensure our prices are not just competitive, but some of the best prices available. Come experience the difference. If you don't have the best overall experience, make sure you ask for me, Mitchell J., or my daughter, Jessica. We're in the store every day or online at midstatedodge.com.
I'm Ted Shattuck. As a doctor practicing in Rutland for over 30 years, I have witnessed firsthand insurance companies interfering in the medical decisions of doctors and their patients. That's one of the reasons why I support Vermont's plan to switch to Green Mountain Care, a publicly funded, universal health care system. Everybody is in, nobody's out, and Vermonters can get the care they need when they need it.
Paid for by Vermont Leads, Montpelier, Vermont.
It's time again for the Vermont Lottery Second Chance Drawings. And this time, there's more than $220,000 in prizes. The Vermont Lottery is holding its quarterly Second Chance Drawing on Wednesday, December 10th. You could still win the top prizes in qualifying instant tickets. Tickets like $100,000 jackpot, high roller, and more. There's over $220,000 in prizes to win. Hurry, enter your qualifying non-winning instant ticket at vtlottery.com by December 9th. Please play responsibly.
Right, we're back continuing our discussion with Jack Hoffman and Paul Cielo. Sorry we didn't get to more of your calls, but I'll give me a shot here. Bill in Waterbury, good morning.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Good.
Good. So this has been a very interesting discussion. I think it's pretty telling, though, that someone as informed as you are, Act 60 has been in place for 17 years, and the fact that you're not sure about the whole per pupil spending, I think, is pretty telling.
Yeah.
People don't understand this. As far as property taxes are concerned, you know, come and sit here when we collect the taxes and listen to people. It's just becoming a huge burden. A couple of quick statistics. In 1997, the state spent $668 million on education. $197 million of that came from the state, and $460 million from the property tax. So the state was paying 29% of the total then. Projected for 2015, $1.5 billion is the education spending. $490 million almost from the state. $1,017,000 from the property tax. The state will be paying 24% of the total in 2015, compared to 29% that they were paying in 1997, when this was a big deal. One year, the year after Act 60 was adopted, the state rose to 44% of the total of education spending, and now it's dropped back down to 24%. In terms of general fund spending, there's money that goes into the Ed Fund from a lot of different state sources. But in 2000...
Okay, I got to stop you there, though, Bill, because we're almost out of time. But what I'm hearing in that number is that there's a greater burden on property taxpayers.
Yeah, in 1998, 60% of the property tax went to education, 40% was used by local governments. Today, it's 70% to education, 30% to local governments. You just had Commissioner Mears on there talking about phosphorus. The amount of money that we have to spend for stormwater mitigation, say nothing of user fees for sewer treatment plants and things like that. It's all coming out of the same pocket, and the share that's available to the municipalities is shrinking, and it's a big problem.
Right. Let me interrupt.
Bill, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's no question that it's really been since the recession. There's been the fact that the general fund has contribution to the education fund has shrunk has put more of the cost onto the property tax.
Okay. So why wouldn't that indicate the property taxes are too high, Jack? Or would you argue that the education from the other source is too low?
Well, first of all, I think you have to look at what's happening with the, I mean, it has a slightly different effect on people who are paying on the basis of income. But I agree that that some of the burden has shifted. I don't think it's the source of the whole problem.
I think the question of whether property taxes are too high really is a question that gets decided by voters at the local community.
I hear you, but I'm seeing that there's a 5% difference. That's a significant difference in terms of 24 to 29%. That's a bigger burden the taxpayers are paying in property taxes.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. In property taxes, but remembering that 70% of those voters or those taxpayers are paying based on their income. So we're calling, it really functions as an income tax. So there's 70% that are paying based on their income, like an income tax. So that leaves 30% that are paying property taxes on their homes, actually paying property tax.
So everybody thinks property taxes are too high. You just think that they don't really know what they're talking about.
I don't know who's saying that. So that's the question I have. Is we saw a story in the Burlington, front page of the Burlington Free Press that talked about a guy in Milton that said he lost his home based on a bill that was $4,000 on his home. And so it's true that we looked up as, you know, it's public information to look at what the property taxes are, and they were about $3,800, $3,700. But we have no idea whether he actually paid $3,700 for, and that wasn't the school tax, that was both municipal and school. We have no idea if that's what he paid, because his income is not something that's publicly accessible. So the question is, in that front page story in the Free Press, is was this person actually paying? You know, was property tax actually the reason?
Right.
So we would love to get the information to determine who is actually having a problem.
All right. And when you
and to correct that problem, it just means to increase the general fund share. I don't think it requires an overhaul of the whole system. It just means you have to appropriate more money from the general fund. Right. I'm not sure the legislature wants to do that.
Thank you both for coming in. This is FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, AM 550 WDEV Waterbury. Montpelier News is coming your way next.